Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Oh, Miles here.
Your outpost for the week is freshly delivered, and I am just one of your hosts here, Matthew Rushing, and so excited as every week she is with me, Drea Kaufman.
Hello!
Drea, did you know that we only have...
That's about all I got.
Yeah, no, but excitingly, we only have 11 episodes left counting this one.
I'm sad.
Isn't that crazy?
I'm definitely sad by that.
Yeah, it is insane.
It is.
But we could celebrate because we got a brand new review over on iTunes from JGG565. They said, phenomenal, a Harry Potter companion, 5 stars. These guys are phenomenal, and I've always wanted to discuss the chapters with someone, and this podcast makes it happen. So happy you guys work so hard. Thank you for this, smiley face. You know what? You're welcome, and we are phenomenal.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Yes. Well, thank you so much for that. It means a ton to us that you would review the show. We really appreciate it. Of course, you know, you could find us wherever you get your podcasts. You know, we're on Apple Podcasts or, you know, Spotify or any of the places podcasts can be had. So just search for us and make sure you're subscribed so you get it as soon as it drops. And you can find us on Twitter at Join Nerd Party. We're on Facebook at facebook.com/nerdparty. We're on Instagram at The Nerd Party. And of course, you can find thenerdparty.com where you can even send us an email if you'd like. So, Drea, we are here at Chapter 28, The Missing Mirror, and they have apparated to Hogsmeade. And the moment they get there, she describes it that there is a scream that sounds like Voldemort when he had realized the cup had been stolen going off. And they're basically immediately surrounded by Death Eaters, but they can't see them, of course, because they're under the cloak.
Oof. We start out, we talked about the end of last episode that it's kind of all downhill from here in terms of we're going down the hill of the roller coaster, right? And yeah, we don't really stop when we land after apparating. And they're very confused on what to do. And I feel like this scene takes a lot longer in the book than it does in the movie because it's over pretty quickly. But it really plays out sort of technically, I guess. Like, they fall. They don't know what to do. They don't know where to go. They don't know what's happening. All of a sudden, they're surrounded. And they're like, well, there's too many to fight. So what do we do? And at the same time, you're getting the Death Eaters, same conversation. Like, they're here somewhere. They try to Accio the cloak.
Which they can't.
Which is also interesting. Which they can't, which is interesting and kind of goes back to this idea that Harry's invisibility cloak is very different than every other invisibility cloak, right? It's not a cloak with an invisibility charm on it. It is very invisible of its own. So it's just like, we're also listening to the Death Eaters conversation and Harry and Hermione and Ron's thought process. And, you know, we get all sides of this and we kind of end up with like, they don't really know what to do.
Yeah, and it is interesting, too, because they decide that they're going to call in the Dementors and let them basically kiss Harry, because how much easier will it be for Voldemort to kill him, which he wants to do, if he doesn't have his soul? And so as the Death Eaters approach, there's only one thing Harry can do. He can't, you know, let them get them. And so he whispers Expecto Patronum. And what I loved in this book, and it kind of like made me emotional, it was crazy what he says, or he's thinking that of Ron and Hermione when he whispers it. Like, he's thinking of them, saving them, his love for them. And of course, you know, his stag does what it does. And that at that moment, when the Death Eaters see that, it kind of distracts them and, of course, the Dementors, and they get called into a doorway and told to go upstairs, keep the cloak on, and to be quiet. And it turns out that it's the bartender there at the Hogshead who is helping them. And I love his excuses to the Death Eaters. They're just so fantastic. The way he basically talks them in circles, gets around them, and then also reminds them that if you have a problem with me putting my cat out, which is what I was doing, you can stop coming to my shop, and I will make sure that you won't be able to do any underhanded deals anymore.
Yeah, I love that he's essentially the black market for the Death Eaters. And he gets, he's basically threatens to pull that out from underneath them. He's like, hey, you haul me in, you're not going to have your black market anymore. So, good luck with that. And they're all like, we'll let you go this time. It's such an empty threat.
Yeah, it is really, really funny. And then, of course, he shows them his Patronus, which is a goat, which not too unsimilar, but so he's able to kind of fudge the whole thing. And as he comes back upstairs, Harry's kind of looking around, and there's something on his mantelpiece. And it is a rectangular mirror that's propped up right by a portrait of a girl. And Harry knows exactly what that mirror is. And it is the other seeing mirror, which is now he knows what the blue eye, which he has been seeing in that, is from, because it is Dumbledore's brother, Aberforth.
And I love, and it's a little thing here, and you have to pay attention, but I love that if you pay attention at the beginning of the book, and there's all that Rita Skeeter nonsense and things like that, one of the things they throw out there is that Aberforth has a special relationship to goats, and then the fact that his Patronus is a goat definitely made me chuckle a little bit. I think it's just totally whimsical, but it did make me chuckle a little bit.
Yeah. No, I agree with you. It was pretty funny. And it's sad too, because, Harry obviously is able to, figure out you're the one who sent Dobby to us, which is fantastic. And of course, he asks where Dobby is. He figured he would be with them, and, they have to tell them that he died. And he's like, man, I liked that elf, And two, we find out that the mirror he had bought off Mundungus a year ago, he knew what it did from Dumbledore, his brother, Albus, and he had been trying to keep an eye on them. And so he gives them some food, and then they start to have an argument because he's telling them, you need to leave, you need to get out of here, we'll, try and get you out in the morning. And Harry's like, I'm not leaving because I have a job to do. And Aberforth really, he's not for this. Like, he does not see the reason for Harry to do any of this. And they basically start the argument about, whether what Albus wanted was best for them. And we start to find out that, there are more people that have a problem with Albus, and one of the people who has the biggest problem with him is his brother.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think we give Harry something he's sort of earned, right? He's been going this entire book plus a little on kind of pure trust of Dumbledore, of Albus, right? Because we have that whole chunk at the beginning where he's not sure what to believe. And even in this chapter, they highlight the fact that once he buried Dobby, he decided he would just sort of blindly trust Dumbledore and stop taking so much energy to figure out whether any of this is true or what this is true or why it happened, and just know that he trusted the man he knew. And so we're sort of rewarded. That trust is sort of rewarded here with a firsthand account and knowledge of the background of Dumbledore and his family.
Well, and, Harry also mentions to him, he's like, it has to be me. Dumbledore explained it all, and I've known that it has to be me. I've known that I have to die, or he has to die, for a long time now. Like, I've made my peace with what has to happen. And
he lays it out in this very, non-cryptic, but, kind of obscure way. He's like, if you don't think I know what happens here, you're crazy. Like, I know what this is going to lead to, and I've made my peace with it.
Mm-hmm. Well, and then, Hermione asks him, if that the picture is of his sister, and, he mentions in the argument something that happened between Albus and himself, and Hermione says, you're talking about her, aren't you? And this is where we learn the history of what went down between the Dumbledore family. And we kind of heard a little bit of this from the book. So Rita Skeeter, of course, she twists all the facts completely, but she actually wasn't wrong. And that's, I think, what we find here is really, you know, it's damning for Dumbledore in a sense, but at the same time, it shows how much Dumbledore grew as a person as well, from this young character to the one we know throughout the series. And it's a really, it is a gut-wrenching story about what happens to this poor family.
Yeah, it is. And it's you can see the pieces of truth we get from Dodge. You can see the elaborated truth that came from Rita Skeeter. And then you get some insights that you don't have before, including a very valuable piece of information about Ariana, about their sister, and the fact that she was very magical as a kid. But the reason that Albus's dad went to prison was for attacking muggles, but they had tortured his daughter into insanity.
I mean, they torture her into becoming an obscurus. I mean, that's
right. Which we don't know what that is in the book. That's a
right. That's not actually.
We know what that is from universal knowledge, but they basically torture her into like magical insanity, basically.
Yeah. Which is very difficult, obviously, with their dad gone. They have to look after her and her mother. This is the reason that her mother always kept Ariana at home with her. It wasn't because she had anything against her daughter. It's because she knew that she needed that. She needed that stability. And honestly, what was interesting about this is that Aberforth was actually her favorite. He was the one who was really able to get her to calm down. They had the closest relationship. When she was 14, she wasn't there, and he wasn't there to calm her down, and she accidentally kills her mother. And so with him at school and Dumbledore done with school, Albus done with school, Aberforth still at school, it gets really bad because this is the point in which Albus starts hanging out with Grindelwald, and they have all of these plans about, you know, going around the world and, you know, working for the greater good and, you know, everything. And it leads to an argument between Aberforth and Albus and Grindelwald because their plan is to take Ariana with them as they travel. And Aberforth's like, well, there's no way in crap that you can do that. She needs stability. She needs to be in one place. And Grindelwald really instigates everything because he gets very angry, tells him that he's being stupid. And, you know, when they basically take over the world, when, you know, wizards can come out of hiding, she won't even have to worry about this. You know, muggles will be taught their place, and it turns into a massive fight. And this is where Ariana ends up dead.
Yeah. And Aberforth has a very sort of cynical approach to this. You know, he's like, I participated, Albus participated, it could have been any one of us, but he kind of took the situation very differently. He was like, but Albus got to be free after that. He got to be free of the burden of caring for our sister. He got to be free of the family. He got to be free to pursue whatever life he wanted to pursue. And that's really where Harry kind of gets the door open, right? That's where he gets his foot in the conversation to sort of correct that. Because as we learned at the end of book six, like, that's not true.
This was another place where it was just, you know, gut-wrenching, you know. And he says, obviously, Aberforth, you know, puts forth the claim that, you know, now Albus was free. And Harry said he was never free. And that the night he was drinking the potion, when he was saying, you know, don't hurt them, please hurt me instead. Harry believed he was speaking of Grindelwald. He was speaking of that night, of how he was basically watching, you know, Grindelwald torture Aberforth and Ariana, and he could never be free of that. And I think, you know, one of the things that this chapter alludes to and stuff that we've seen earlier in the series, so we could bring it in here, but Dumbledore never requested power. He abdicated power. He never...
After this incident.
Yeah, after this, absolutely. Like, this helped change him for the better, in the sense that he saw, I think, the light in many ways of who he was becoming, what he was kind of being led to do with this relationship with Grindelwald, but also that power, if he was given it, he might do the wrong thing with it. And therefore, he abdicated that power of being like the Minister for Magic or to other people. Yes, he would help those that were in power with his wisdom, but he was never going to seek that power for himself.
Right. Yeah, it's a, and I think even throughout the series, and correct me if I'm wrong, and you know, everyone out there to set me straight here at some point. But if I remember correctly, he also sort of nods to this earlier on, very early on in the books, about how like power corrupts. That was the entire theme. And this is why he sees what he sees in Voldemort before anybody else does, and beyond what anybody else can. That's why he understands him so well, right? That's why Albus could understand Tom Riddle, and he did. That's why he invested in him so much, because he saw himself in him and wanted to show him there's a better and a different way.
And yeah, I think you're absolutely right.
And it's so heart-wrenching and gut-wrenching to see, and it had to just kill him to fail, because let's be perfectly honest, he failed, not of his own fault, but he failed. And I think that's part of why he had such a passion to solve the problem, right? He felt he was somewhat responsible, and he didn't do it, even if he wasn't. We could argue here whether he was or wasn't, but he felt responsible and wanted to solve the problem. And that's the lesson he taught Harry, and that's what he saw in Harry and what he felt he could do in the situation, which is what made the relationship with Harry so complicated. He knew he had to die, but he also knew this was a chance for him to sort of do what he could never do with Voldemort. So it adds so much depth to the Dumbledore character, and it adds so much depth to the relationships he developed with Harry and Voldemort and all of this throughout the whole book, to really learn kind of his, if you will, his origin story.
Yeah.
That's how I always kind of thought about this chapter. So,
well, and I think what's interesting here is that, you know, as they tell him, we can't hide. And Harry says, you know, sometimes you've got to think about things other than your own safety. You've got to think about the greater good. This is war. And when Harry says that, what he's meaning is, it's not the greater good that Grindelwald and Albus were thinking of. He's thinking of the sacrificial greater good. Like, Harry realizes, and this is where it can become so powerful. He's like, I know I have to keep going till I succeed or I die. Either way, I've known how this has to end for years, you know? And I think there's such a beauty and there's such a selflessness here to Harry that, you know, one of the themes of Harry Potter that I think is just so gorgeous is, obviously, you know, we've talked about how it's about death, but really this is about laying your life down for somebody else, being willing to put your actual life on the line.
Right, it's about love and the sacrifice it requires to truly love someone.
Yeah.
It starts with his parents. It continues through Harry. It's about the selflessness of existence and the true sort of unconditional love that you can feel for other people, even when they do wrong by you. And that culminates here with Harry telling him, like we mentioned, he knows he's going to die. And he has made his peace with that, because that is what this situation needs. It's what it's going to need to resolve itself, and nothing else is going to do it. So he can either sit by knowing he could have done something and he didn't, or he can make the world a better place for all the people he loves. And that is the choice that he makes. And that's that greater good that you're referring to.
Yeah.
Well, it's powerful.
Yeah. Well, and the thing about it is that it is love in action. Like, we can't just say we love people, but it's actual action being taken, you know? And so there's a big difference between saying we love people and actually showing that we love people. I mean, I think that's the beauty of this. And I, what I love too is that Aberforth, he doesn't say anything. Harry's like, we need to get into Hogwarts. And he turns to the picture and he tells her, you know what to do. And he tells them there's only one way into Hogwarts now, because every other way, even the secret passages, have been blocked off. Ariana comes back, and who should come with him but a very shaggy and rugged looking Neville Longbottom. And he is so excited to see Harry Potter. And dang it, that's how we end the chapter.
But I love this match. So she takes all these situations, and something she's done throughout all her books, she takes all these situations that are seemingly normal. Someone walks out of a room. You go to school. Like, they take all these everyday normal situations, and she adds something very fantastical to them. And in this case, I love, love. It's been one of my favorite magical things that has ever happened in the books, is this idea of the portrait being an actual tunnel that then opens up and they can actually travel through. Like, it makes zero scientific physics sense, but the way it plays out in the movie, it was just, it's so amazing. And I love it. I love that they can actually travel through this portrait hole. And it reminds me so much of, like, the Room of Requirement, right? Which we'll learn, we'll learn more about what happens at the end of this tunnel in the next chapter, not to spoil it for anybody if I just did. But I love that it has this sort of ridiculous feeling to it, because it's exactly what you need at that moment. And what do you think? There, exactly it is. Exactly what you needed is there for you when you need it. And I love that little magical element that happens right here at the end of the chapter. And we all love Neville. I mean, we got to love us some Neville.
Me too.
So we're excited to see him again.
Well, Drea, as you mentioned, everything is just, you know, we're going to hit the ground running, and we're just going to keep going. So if people want to catch up with you, where can they find you?
You can find me on Twitter at PCFChick or on Instagram at Drea Kaufman, and it's Kaufman.
And you can find me on Twitter, Instagram, Letterboxd, and all the places under Matt Rushing 02. All the places, like Vero, that kind of stuff. Yeah. So, basically, you know, I'm just saying this. If I'm, you know, in a,
if I'm on a social media platform, it's under that
Just
name.
Look for Matt Rushing 02. So, you can also find me, here on the network doing aggressive negotiations with John Mills as we talk about Star Wars each and every week. It's so much fun. We have a great time. If you love Star Wars, honestly, I got to say, this is the show for you. So please do check it out. You can also find me over on the Trek FM network doing a few shows. One is called the 602 Club, which is our general geek show, all about all the fandoms we love. We don't just talk about one, so hope you'll check that out. And we've got a new show coming there under the 602 Club banner. We're going to call it Snyder Cuts, and John Mills and I are going to be walking through the films and the directorial work of Zack Snyder as we look towards his new films coming out this year. Of course, Zack Snyder's Justice League, as well as his Army of the Dead. So that's going to be fun. It's just going to be a short run show. Just going to have a good time with it. And then, of course, doing Literary Treks in the Orb over there. Literary Treks is about the books and the comics of Star Trek, and the Orb is about Star Trek Deep Space Nine. But gosh, Drea, with all that said, we just want to say to everyone listening, thank you so much for checking your outpost.
Mischief managed.
Join the revolution. Join the Nerd Party.